The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am your hometown girl, Shadate Harget Hill, with the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Connect to Success. For the next half hour, I will share articles with you from OptimicEdge.org, BlindGirl.com, and Blind.com. Inspiring stories of people thriving with vision loss. We love to share stories of people succeeding with vision loss at every age and stage of life. It reminds us all that there is no limit to what is possible. Each story has the power to inspire so many more to find the potential in perseverance. Rachel Christian is a journalist. Rachel, a personal finance writer who is legally blind, from cone dystrophy, finds working from home is profoundly empowering. She has control of her work environment, does not feel self-conscious around coworkers, and she does not have to deal with the transportation hurdles inherent for visually impaired commuters. It's a game changer. Here's why working from home works for Rachel. As someone in the blind and low vision community, the expansion of remote work has been an economic game changer. Normally, people with visual impairments face major hurdles in the workforce, from overcoming hiring discrimination to securing reliable transportation. Less than half of U.S. adults with visual impairments were in the labor force in 2019. Transportation is often a major barrier to steady employment for visually and blind people. A research by the American Foundation for the Blind found that 38% of people with blindness or low vision had turned down a job due to transportation concerns. Rachel says, "I've experienced this firsthand. As a 21-year-old college student, I was a year and a half from graduation, and a prestigious daily newspaper internship was at my fingertips. I'd been freelancing for the paper for a semester and had built a rapport with the news editor. I submitted my resume and clip and cinched the interview. Completing an online application was the final step. It was just a formality, the editor told me. I breezed through it until I hit a seemingly mundane question. Do you have a valid driver's license? My heart sank. My vision has been deteriorating since I was 15 years old due to a rare retinal disease called cone dystrophy. There's no cure, but I've adapted. I learned how to adjust the contrast, brightness, and zoom on my computer and smartphone to be able to excel in college. Despite overcoming these challenges, I still didn't have a driver's license. I still don't. I've never even driven a car. I told the truth on the application. A few days later, the editor informed me the internship was off the table. The driver's license requirement was corporate policy. Interns often went out on assignment. You had to have a car. His hands were tied, he said. I went on to land a different internship, but that missed position still haunted me. I'd been so close to my goal and was disqualified simply because I couldn't drive. Transportation remained a chronic pain point through my career. Without a car, certain opportunities were eliminated. If a job wasn't near a bus or train stop, it didn't matter how well qualified I was. It wasn't an option. About 6 months after starting a job at the marketing firm, the pandemic hit. My company went full remote, like so many others across the country. I no longer struggled to see my computer screen in the sun-drenched window-filled office. I could keep my apartment as dark as a cave without inconveniencing anyone. And if I needed to lean forward and squint at my monitor, I didn't feel self-conscious or worry about what my coworkers might think. My writing speed spiked. I made fewer mistakes. I picked up extra assignments and added 2 hours to my day previously lost to commuting. The shift to remote work can make disabilities much less visible. My accommodations are already on my computer, so my coworkers don't even realize excessive technology is in place. This capped the pool of candidates to a tight geographic area, limiting the employment options and the earning potential of workers, especially those with low vision. Due to the pandemic, that's no longer the case. Now having a polished online portfolio and web presence goes much further than handshakes at happy hour meetings. I experienced this firsthand about a month ago when a recruiter messaged me on LinkedIn about a senior writer position with a personal finance website. The office was an hour and a half away, but to attract qualified candidates, the company had made the position fully remote. I applied and got the job because of my experience, skill set, and personality the way it's supposed to be. My home office is customized and adapted to my needs. I've mastered the technology that helps me do my job. I still have occasional hiccups with Zoom, but hey, don't we all? There's no need to hide my disability, but there's no need to disclose it yet either. A lack of transportation won't hinder my ability to write or get to work on time. Of course, the pandemic hasn't leveled the playing field for all blind workers. Only those who are proficient with technology. Still, more jobs than ever are going remote after the pandemic, from customer service to writing to data entry. To expand inclusivity to more people in the blind and low vision community, companies need to do their part. Employers should audit their own accessibility capabilities and establish inclusive initiatives for remote employees with disabilities. It's also on the employee to educate themselves and their employers on accessible technology. If you have low vision, work with state agencies and nonprofits such as the Lighthouse to gain the proper training, education, and equipment you need to succeed. Don't be afraid to ask what low vision aids or other devices your company may provide you. Working with a disability is never easy, but the current labor market positions people impacted by vision loss to excel in a remote work world. For the millions of U.S. adults with a vision impairment, inclusion and newfound economic opportunity may be the greatest perk of a remote work world. Isaac Linsky, an author. Most of his sight was lost by the age of 25 to retinitis pigmentosa. In the process, he discovered that fear can be much more debilitating than vision loss. In his memoir, Eyes Wide Open, he discovered blindness could be overcome by letting go of overarching anxiety and inhibitions. Isaac says, "I've gained vision by losing my sight." He says, "Don't be blinded by fear. By constraining our focus, anxiety prevents us from seeing all the options available to us. Further, it immobilizes us from taking any corrective action, setting the stage for a self-fulfilling prophecy. I've gained vision by losing my sight," confesses Isaac Linsky in his candid and literally eye-opening memoir, Eyes Wide Open. First diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, a degenerative eye disease, at the age of 13, Linsky's sight gradually deteriorated during his teens and early 20s. By the age of 25, he was fully blind. At first, he didn't really notice, but slowly he perceived holes, which only increased in size and number as the years progressed. When he received the diagnosis at the age of 13, he was wrought by fear as a dark and hopeless future beckoned him. Remarkably, as his sight eroded, Linsky gained deeper insight into human perception and began to appreciate how fear can be more blinding than the disease that robbed him of his sight. As Linsky realized over time, we don't just see what is out there through an objective lens. Rather, our memories, thoughts, assumptions, and feelings also impact what we perceive. So all of our perceptions, be it sight, sound, or touch, are subjective and are shaped by the perceiver's habits and instincts. Thus, you create and perpetuate your own reality, though it feels like you are passively observing the world around you as it is. During one of his early forays into blind independence, he decided to take a walk on his own using his cane to guide him. He left home on a hopeful and optimistic note, only to be overcome with dread as he discovered he was lost after about an hour of walking around. Fear and its concordant cousins, like embarrassment, shame, and sadness, coursed through his being. He even began to panic, but after sitting down by the curb and breathing deeply, Linsky realized that fear can prevent you from seeing, just like eyes. He calmed himself down and surveyed the options before him. What seemed like a Herculean crisis a few minutes before now boiled down to a manageable problem of retracing his steps and asking for directions. Overwhelming emotions, Linsky discovered, can distort our perspective as much as or more than a faulty sense organ. By constraining our focus, anxiety prevents us from seeing all the options available to us. Further, it immobilizes us from taking a corrective action, setting the stage for a self-fulfilling prophecy. In the early days, as his eyes eroded, Linsky could not help catastrophizing about a future of gloom and doom. But as he gradually adapted to his changed world by using a cane, learning to use special screen reading software, and following practical tips from an occupational therapist, Linsky had an epiphany that blindness could be tackled if he let go of his overarching fears and inhibitions. He had the first dispel notions entrenched in him by societal condition. For example, he had to dismiss the idea that using a cane made him vulnerable. He had to let go of early assumptions that cast disability as weakness and dependence on others as insecurity. Linsky admits that he is horrified by the misguided construction of disability that he himself had carried. As Linsky learned to accept his new reality, he counsels readers to follow their own unique paths without worrying about what other people might think. While his sight grew more fractured, Linsky found that his other faculties sharpened. One evening, he visited a new restaurant along with his wife and their friends. After being led to their table by a waitress, one person in his group wanted to use the restroom. Linsky was the only one in the group who could guide the woman to the restroom, as none of the others had noticed where it was while walking to their table. Relying on his senses of smell and sound, Linsky had precisely noted where the bar and restrooms were located. Though his wife and his friends did not have compromised hearing or smell, they hadn't utilized these facilities the way Linsky did. Over two decades after his initial diagnosis that set alarm bells chiming, Linsky declares that blindness feels familiar, comfortable, normal, routine. Further, he has led a rich life, replete with achievements and fulfillment. He graduated from Harvard with a degree in computer science and mathematics, went on to study at Harvard Law School, served as a clerk at the U.S. Supreme Court, and now runs a successful construction business. Besides, he has a lovely wife and is the proud father of four children. By conquering our self-limiting fears, we too can chart meaningful life paths, eyes wide open. Alexandra Joy Crocco, photographer. She has a white cane in one hand and a camera in the other, which can be a confusing sight. But that just goes to show you can have an eye for photography without having good sight. Alexandra's multiple vision problems are caused by albinism, and although she can't see a lot of detail, she has proven her ability to capture the special moments her clients treasure. Here's how the Legally Blind Orange photographer achieves career milestones and aims for her next challenge. Alexandra Joy Crocker is a legally blind photographer and already has a vast client base, but she wanted to prove something to herself by taking a rigorous test to become officially certified by the Professional Photographers of America. Uncertain about whether she could pull it off, Crocker decided to book a future trip to Disney World, figuring it was going to be a celebratory trip or a cheer myself up trip, she said. Turns out it would be confetti time with Mickey and the gang. Crocker passed both the written and practical tests for official certification, the latter a precise exercise in photography that was the same for all. 6 years ago, she opened Alexandra Joy Photography. If you had asked me about doing this when I first started, I'd have put it as a dream, not a goal, she said. Crocker has albinism, which means she has no pigment in her skin or hair, including her eyebrows and eyelashes. Vision and other eye problems are common in the genetic disorder, and she has her share. She is legally blind. The vision in her good eye is 20 over 600, and her bad one 20 over 800. And she also has nystagmus. She also has nystagmus. She also has nystagmus, meaning her eyes make repetitive, uncontrolled movements. I like to say I'm a socially awkward weirdo. I can't make eye contact. I squint more than others. I squint more than others. I tilt my head, Crocker said. She said people also are confused when they see she has a guide stick in one hand and a camera in the other. She can't see the details of a face from even inches away, doesn't have the best depth perception, yet has won many photography awards and wows clients with an uncanny ability to capture that special moment of emotion. Crocker relies on her keen sense of hearing to get cues from the laughter, voices, and other sounds of children and families she shoots. She's engaging, brings props, clients say, and creates that mood that her ears pick up. She also can sense the sound of frustration in a child's voice, even when they can't express it, signaling to Crocker that it's time for a break and to get her client happy again. Once the joyful sounds resonate, she shoots rapidly, so she has a lot of images to choose from, and later in editing, chooses the best pictures through a large computer screen, magnification, and bright light. One of her clients, Judy Primavera, founder of the Jamie Hulley Arts Foundation in honor of her late daughter, uses Crocker and says she excels with shots of people and performers, but even has a way with still life subjects such as a table of food. For someone who has a visual challenge, I'm often amazed that she's so much better than people who have full vision. Primavera said, I am totally overwhelmed by her ability to bring things to life. She's got such a good eye. Primavera said Crocker is a role model for anyone with a challenge. They have to find another way. She's a very special human being very talented, Primavera said. Crocker specializes in photographs for kids, families, and animals with a special place in her heart for the wolves, tigers, and other big cats at a zoo. She was the 2020 Fine Arts Photographer of the Year for the Connecticut Professional Photographers Association and their 2021 Portrait Photographer of the Year. Crocker, widely known in the community as Lexi, joined a small study group in August 2020 of other photographers set to go for their certification. They met until April 2021. When the test was scheduled, it turned out she could read the test but needed help with the bubbles. In the practical portion of the test, the applicants had to photograph a white foam ball, a box of crayons, and a marker with certain specifications that required measuring distances. She used a big print measuring tape, using light and various other photographic elements. "You had to earn it," she said. "I kept telling myself I wasn't good enough, but she was." She got the news that she was officially certified. Croco started running laps around the kitchen. "My grandmother thought I was a crazy person," Croco said. She didn't need to prove anything to clients and potential clients, but rather, I think it was proving it to myself. Since Croco is always challenging herself and has found strategies for overcoming so much in life, she has her eye on the next goal and dream to earn the destinations in the photo industry of craftsman, then master. "It's another level, and it's going to take some time," Croco said. "Part of that requires teaching, and her idea is to teach other photographers, how she operates as a legally blind photographer. I have to take seeing out of the equation in many areas of the trade," she said. One of her strategies to have a system of extreme organization, charge batteries always in the same place in the camera bag, uncharged in another, so she can just reach in without looking. She said, "When photographing kids, they will invariably do something adorable when lenses are being changed, so she has to do it quickly. I want to give my way of doing things to help others," she said, noting there could be photographers facing challenges as they age. Croco said there have been many challenges generally in life because of her albinism, but she always looks for the way around them. "I'm going to give myself the pat I think I deserve now and move on to my next adventure." Lynn McKinney Lambert, an artist. A retired professor of fine arts and humanities, has not let vision loss stop her from creating award-winning art. Her vision loss, resulting from ischemic optic neuropathy, precipitated a new life. Linda McKinney Lambert is proof of that art is more than about vision. Lambert, who is legally blind, recently received another award recognizing her full spectrum of creativity. She won first prize for Evening Vespers, a piece of jewelry she entered in the Insights 21 art competition. The judges said, "We are grateful for your entry and excited to share your work with the world." A passion for art has always been a force in Lambert's life. The retired professor of fine arts and humanities at Geneva College, Lambert's creative nonfiction, essays, and poetry have been featured in anthologies, academic books, and journals, as well as literary magazines. She is also the author of the Concerte Psalms for the Pilgrimage. In 1976, Lambert opened her studio, River Road, and exhibited her paintings at Jurid shows in the United States and abroad. You can also learn more about Lambert at her two blogs, Scandalous and Linda Lambert website. Linda creates art as a painter, writer, mixed fiber, and sculptor, and does it all visually impaired. On New Year's Day, 2017, Lambert woke up with blurred vision and assumed she was unable to focus because her eyes needed rest. Eventually, she was diagnosed with ION, which meant she would not regain sight in that eye. She led her Geneva College students on an art and literature tour of Europe, not letting on that she was struggling to see. In October of that year, Lambert left for a sabbatical to explore the writings and visual art of Hildegard of Bingen and investigate the ideas of adornment for medieval women. While studying at museums in New York, Lambert lost the sight in her other eye and returned home. She had to build an entirely new kind of life, and for her, it had to contain art. Lambert got help from Blind and Vision Rehabilitation Services of Pittsburgh, the Keystone Blind Association in Newcastle, and the Pennsylvania Bureau of Blindness and Visual Services in Erie. As Lambert's confidence returned, she began knitting a sweater where she had left off when she lost her sight and has continued to take up challenges of life and art without sight. Most of the time, I forget that I can't see. I don't think of myself as blind. I just figure out how to do things. My life's pretty normal, Lambert said. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being completely blind, I am a 9. She said, I can see ghost-like images and movement, and I depend on my sense of touch. By using a special closed-circuit television designed for blind people who work with their hands, Lambert is able to see the beads, but she cannot see color, so she selects the colors by reading the magnified names of colors on the bead packages, resulting in her vibrant colored jewelry. She describes her jewelry designs as ancient or medieval, with layers of beadwork creating the type of ornate neckwear that was worn by royalty and priests. Lambert spends up to 10 hours a day, every day, for about a month, creating her neck pieces and talismans, which also contain gemstones related to hearing or protection. Each piece is one of a kind, and when I start putting together stones and beads that attract me, I don't know what the piece is going to look like when it is done. It is a sacred journey, and when it is completed, I know it, she said. The pieces in the art shows are exhibition pieces, and of course, you can wear them. I don't market them, but I have sold a few. Every day is an opportunity for creating, and Lambert, who is also recognized as a talented potter and mixed fiber artist, envisions and creates in many art forms. Currently, she is working on a new series of wall pieces of the season in mixed medium, and she is working on a new book that will be a companion to her Walking by Inner Vision stories and poems. Lambert says she is a jewelry and makeup addict and started making jewelry in the mid-1990s after graduate school. While visiting her daughter Elsa Barry in Georgia, they were shopping in a craft show when Lambert saw a shell that fascinated her and asked her daughter, who was making jewelry, to teach her how to make a necklace. I took the shell and some beads that attracted me, and she taught me how to make a necklace, and I continued to create jewelry. To me, creating art is the most sacred activity there is. It's a calling. It's a nonverbal prayer. It takes the entire being. That's why, without sight, I could keep making art. We've run out of time for today's episode of Connect to Success. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm your hometown girl, Shadate Hargett Hill, for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Connect to Success is available as podcasts at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. See you next time on the radio.